From Zen Master Keizan's Denkoroku, Transmitting the Light. The Cases. Shakyamuni. Shakyamuni Buddha saw the morning star and was enlightened. And he said, I and the great earth and beings simultaneously achieve the way. Mahakashapa. The first ancestor was Mahakashapa. Once the world-honored one held up a flower and blinked. Kashapa smiled. The world-honored one said, I have the treasury of the eye of the true Dharma and wondrous mind of Nirvana, and I transmit it to Mahakashapa. Ananda. The second ancestor was the venerable Ananda. He asked the venerable Kashapa, elder Dharma brother, did the world-honored one transmit anything else to you beside the gold brocade robe? Kashapa called, Ananda. Ananda replied, Kashapa said, knock down the flagpole in front of the gate. Ananda was greatly awakened. Shanavasa. The third ancestor was Shanavasa. He asked Ananda, what kind of thing is the original unborn nature of all things? Ananda pointed to a corner of Shanavasa's robe. Again, he asked, what kind of thing is the original nature of the Buddha's awakening? Ananda grasped a corner of Shanavasa's robe and pulled it. At that time, Shanavasa was greatly awakened. Commentary. The venerable Shanavasa was originally a wizard who lived in the Himalaya mountains. He joined with the venerable Ananda, and so we have this story. This what kind of thing is the original unborn nature of all things? Or has he asked in the second question, what kind of thing is the original nature of the Buddha's awakening? Is truly a question no one had ever asked. Shanavasa alone asked it. There is no one who is not born with this original unborn nature of all things. But no one knows it, and no one asks about it. Why is it called unborn nature? Even though the myriad things are born from it, this nature is not something that is born, so it is called unborn nature. It is wholly the original unborn. Mountains are not mountains, and rivers are not rivers. Therefore, Ananda pointed to a corner of Shanavasa's robe. The verse. Sourceless stream from a 10,000-foot cliff, washing out stones, scattering clouds, gushing forth, brushing away the snow, making the flowers wildly fly, a length of pure white silk beyond the dust. When you realize the Buddha Dharma, you do not think, this is realization, just as I expected. Realization is not like your conception of it. realization is not like your conception of it. If realization came forth by the power of your prior mental formations, it would not be trustworthy. Hey, Dogen. So here we are together, climbing the great peaks, descending into the valleys, sometimes bright sun, sometimes clouds and fog, a gentle snowfall drops a layer over everything, and it all turns white. This dance, this great dance, emptiness in form. The words we use presenting the Dharma, so beautiful. And what a tangled web. Not to get lost in the pointers. Deeply important. So easy to stick to the pointers in the way. What is this unborn nature? On the other hand, not to dismiss these pointers. To honor them, to see them as signs pointing the way, but not as the thing itself. Quite a dance. The mind likes to cement things, likes to create understandings, and then use them endlessly as a stand-in for reality itself. And that's how the aliveness of the world can harden. Our conceptions of other people become firm and rigid. We put them in categories and we can't see them anymore. Enemy. They vanish into the category. And yet we need these categories to function, to navigate in the world so that we don't eat poison. How can we use our categories and not be used by them? How can we use the Dharma without becoming overly attached to our ideas of enlightenment, of Buddha nature, of what we're supposed to be? What's so magnificent about koans as a form of practice, as a Dharma teaching tool, is their incredible capacity to undermine our tendency to reify the Dharma in so many unconscious ways. When we are lost in notions of emptiness, someone comes along and tugs our robe. When we're lost in our ideas of the world, in our notions of form and our conceptions, and we're blinded by them, Then along comes the great no. Does a dog have Buddha nature? Oh, I know exactly what Buddha nature is, of course. No, not what you think. Sometimes we talk about the three bodies, like when we're doing our meal chant, talk about Dharmakaya, great, vast emptiness, not a speck of dust anywhere. The cosmos functioning, no gap. Emptiness, unity, the oneness of reality. Snow covering the mountain peaks. All discrimination falls away. To study the self is to forget the self. The second, Nirmanakaya. You, your name, sitting here, distinct from the person beside you, distinct from the stick on the floor, each thing in its place. Performing its part perfectly. And Sambhogakaya, what I like to call the appreciation body or the dream body. Integration. Snow falling on bright colored autumn leaves. Dogen has a poem about that. Snow falling on early autumn leaves. Why doesn't everyone write a poem? What is this? Some sort of dream we're living. Everything unfolding and passing vanishingly quick, moments disappear before we can even acknowledge them. Snap of a finger. How many moments is that? Gone. And yet, in the way of these things, also ever-present, unborn. Suchness shining forth. The sunlight brightens. The lungs breathe. Each like a star in the night sky, each presence shining forth, yet also inseparable from boundless presence. Emptiness and form utterly interwoven, no distinction at all. What is this vast emptiness? What is this unborn nature? Is Ananda saying, oh, just forget it. It's a robe. Yes and no. Yes and no. Forget your idea. Turn toward what is. Turn toward your life. This is the unborn manifesting as the born, as that which arises and decays. In our narrative sense of things, emptiness in form, the foot in front and the foot behind in walking, held in the vast appreciation body of non-discrimination, emptiness in form, falling away themselves, pointers in the way, Dharma teachings, helping to simply illuminate you, your life, what is this incredible mystery we so often overlook, just this. We think, oh, it can't just be this. This is too boring. This is too sad. I'm too frustrated. Or perhaps we're just so distracted. I want something else. I wish I were a child again, eating my grandmother's oatmeal cookies fresh out of the oven. And instead, I'm sitting in a rather cold zendo. Off we go in our realms of fantasy and nostalgia. I wish my mind were different. I wish it wouldn't tell these particular stories. I wish I had someone else's stories. My stories are tough. I'll take someone else's tough stories, like Charlie Brown's. His are pretty good. He can never seem to kick the football. I could handle that. But mine are particularly bad. Well, the good news is you're not alone. Everybody feels that way. So we're in it together. And I mean it. We're in it together. Of course, when we're in our difficult places, we wish it weren't so. That's part of what we get to experience in this practice, the unfolding of life. But can we swim upstream? Instead of just going with the habit mind of rejecting life as it is and of seeking something else, buying the next toy. Look at what we do here. Bit by bit in this practice, we keep doing nothing extra. When it's time to walk, we just walk. When it's time to be still, we be still. Though some part of us wants to move, we just don't. Time to be quiet, we're quiet. Time to eat, we eat. We give ourselves to everything that we are doing completely. Just give ourselves over to this tradition, this 1,000-year-old tradition that holds us. Thousands-year-old traditions woven in to this 1,000-year-old tradition. We shine the light within, and when the stories come up, we take that backward step. We swim upstream. Instead of going with the current of culture, we stay still. We don't act on the impulse. And this means we get to look at the story itself and see it for what it is. Just another story. And eventually it comes and it goes. And another one comes. And another. And another. I think there's something about the contrast between our ever shape-shifting heart mind, if we will, and the regularity of the forms that helps us see kind of foreground background, if you will. That helps us see that actually this is just more stuff being generated just more mental formation in a way, and therefore not get too attached to it. We begin to see it for what it is. Oh yeah, this is that story that I keep acting on, imagining that I'm going to find a better life some other place, some other where, some other time than this right here. It's so subtle, the myriad ways we do this, seeking a slightly better Dharma teaching. Seeking a slightly better understanding. Oh, if I could just get a little bit of a better understanding, then I'd break through, really. I just need that one better mental formation of enlightenment. Put it in my pocket. Just the right words for it. You know, I think I spent the first probably 10 years of my practice trying to come up with words to describe what the hell was going on in my practice. Oh, this is what's meant by openness. And then it would change. Like, oh, wait, all right, let me see if I can get that back. Oh, this is what's meant by boundless. Oh, yeah. This is it. Oh. And then I'd try to pin it down with some sort of definition or process that I could use to get it back when it seemed to go away. And of course, everything goes away. It never returns in the same way. Never. So basically, what I was seeing was my own process of clinging, of desire and clinging, trying to reify the Dharma into some fixed position that I could then maintain and hold on to and identify with in a subtle way as my, quote, self, the one that I was going to put in place of the one I didn't like. And it just goes on and on and on. And if we're lucky, at some point, we just get tired. Just say, man, you know what? This is so much work. And your teacher says to you, well, why don't you stop doing it? But if I do, I'll just be me. Oh. And what will that be? What's that exactly? And notice how quick the story comes up. Not good enough. Unworthy, unenlightened. Now, what if that story is just a story? What if the deepest shift that can happen is the way that we relate with these stories rather than changing their content, rather than struggling with them, rather than believing them, rather than trying to fix anything? You know, one path to do that is to simply say, okay, yeah, fuck it. I'm a failure. There's a beautiful koan, I'm going to totally butcher it because I don't have it in front of me, but it's beautiful. Should I leave it at that? Just trust me. The case is something about, you know, so-and-so, this practitioner sat for, you know, eons and eons and could not attain the way. Why couldn't, let's say she this time, huh, attain the way? Because she is an unattained Buddha. Go ahead, call yourself unattained. You're still Buddha. Attained, unattained, more categories of the mind. Do you see, this practice of awakening is not about adding something, not about changing what we are, not about becoming something extra. In fact, we can let go of all that. Awakening is just what's here now. What is? And you'll find there's nothing you need to add to make it miraculous. Just notice how far your awareness goes right now. Where's its limit? I don't find any edges anywhere. This isn't omniscience. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about looking at what is. What's here? And a story comes up in the mind, this and that. Thoughts, not a problem. As Dogen says, realization is not like any of the mental formations preceding it. But this is not because such formations could not be realization. Past thoughts in themselves were already realization, but since you were seeking elsewhere, you thought and said that thoughts can't be realization. It's not the content of the thought that is the realization. It's awareness of the thought. That's why Dogen says, however, it's worth noticing that what you think one way or another is not a help for realization. Go ahead, think I'm a loser. Realizing our delusion is awakening. So what a moment, huh? This wondrous koan. The third ancestor was Shanavasa. He asked Ananda, what kind of thing is the original unborn nature of all things? Ananda pointed to a corner of Shanavasa's robe. Again he asked, what kind of thing is the original nature of the Buddha's awakening? Ananda then grasped a corner of Shanavasa's robe and pulled it. At that time, Shanavasa was greatly awakened, and the transmission continues to this very moment. Buddha's original awakening, manifesting as you right now. Buddha, I have attained the way, and all beings together simultaneously achieve the way. All beings throughout space and time, including you. It's happening. And Keizan's poem. Sourceless stream from a 10,000-foot cliff, washing out stones, scattering clouds, gushing forth, brushing away the snow, making the flowers wildly fly. A length of pure white silk beyond the dust. It's all Buddha nature. Where is this special thing called Buddha nature? This sourceless stream that scatters clouds and gushes forth. I hope you can feel Ananda tugging your shirt sleeve.